Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahan, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. This is Aaron Carnes, the host of this podcast. After 4.5 years of weekly episodes, we are ready to stop creating In Defense of Ska. The podcast was meant to be a promotional push for my book In Defense of Ska, and it wound up taking on a life of its own. While Adam and I both love what we've accomplished with this podcast, we both feel compelled to focus our creative output elsewhere. The episodes we recorded remain evergreen, and we invite you to explore our back catalog, which will remain online thanks to the Consequence Podcast Network. I am working diligently on a new book, a novel called Little Black Book of Death. It's not ska-related, but it has a strong musical component. I also have a punk-themed script in the works. Adam is working on new music for Omnigon. We invite you to follow our respective projects and look forward to what the future holds. To keep in touch with my writing, follow me on Substack. That's aaroncarnes.substack.com. You can follow Omnigon on their social media accounts. Thank you.
Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to In Defense of Ska. We aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of the music. Ska deserves to be analyzed, dissected, and to have all its intricate stories told, just like other genres like punk, hip-hop, and hardcore. I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, longtime ska musician from such bands as Link 80 and Omnigon. Joining me is your host, Aaron Carnes, renowned author of the book In Defense of Ska, which is currently available in an expanded second edition.
This week, we are going to talk about one of the greatest bands of all time, Fishbone. And to do this, we have a very special guest, comedian and television host W. Kamau Bell.
Now, what are your connection to his work?
He's an interesting person because he's, you know, I remember I watched his CNN show.
Mm-hmm.
So he does stuff like that. He does podcasting. He does comedy. So I've kind of seen a little bit of a bunch of his stuff, and I've always been a big fan. I feel like he's a very thoughtful comedian. He's got a very interesting take on things. And I love seeing him post about Fishbone, which is kind of how this episode came about. You know, it's funny. I should add, before we get into the interview, we recorded this interview a little while ago. After we did this interview, and I think it just happened last night or recently, you know, he hosted an event at the Grammy Museum with Fishbone.
Mm.
So I'm going to assume that it had somehow related to him doing our episode. That's just, I'm just going to assume that.
Mm-hmm. He also, since he was on the show,
yeah,
it was announced that he was the winner of Celebrity Jeopardy, which also, again,
yeah,
is because of us.
What about yourself?
You know, I only know his work through tangentially, through someone here that lives in Alameda. Mm-hmm. But I think we'll get to that somewhere in the episode, maybe in the bonus section. But for now, let's bring on Kamau and get this fishbone conversation rolling.
A quick disclaimer. I don't want my status as a fishbone superfan revoked. So I got to acknowledge a part of the interview where I talk at length about the song Lemon Meringue, and I meant the song Black Flowers. I know that it was a mistake. I ask for your forgiveness, fellow fishbone cadets. I know it feels like a long time ago, but last, was it October? Mm-hmm. Was Fishbone released a racist piece of shit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Another kid rock with all the hate talk. Murder, sickness, global crisis, cool to drop vanilla ice. Oh, you're just a racist piece of shit. Oh, you're just a racist piece of shit.
You posted about it? As a private in the Fishbone Soldier Army.
Yes.
And you refer to it as an instant classic. This was like right before the election, right? I think that's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's talk about that song a little bit.
Well, the cool thing about that song is it's the first time I've ever been on the inside of the Fishbone sort of like music making process. So Chris Dowd had relocated to Oakland for a little bit, and... Mm-hmm. Because I'm one of the mayors of the entertainment side of Oakland, like I would do a Fishbone concert and that he had done in like that previous December, and I met him and he knew who I was and I knew who he was, of course, because I've known who he was since I was 17, and we became friends. And so I got to hear that song like over time built up to what it ended up being. So it was sort of the first time I ever got to hear things that work in progress from Fishbone, which was really cool. And so the first time I heard it, I was like, this is great. And then every time he sent me a new version, oh, this is better. And then a new version. And then finally, Angela was on. I'm like, oh, now it's a Fishbone song. So it's just, yeah. So it was, I think that it's funny to see when they posted that song, how many of their fans were like, get out of politics. Why you got to make things political? Why you got to talk about racism? It's like, do you know the band you've been listening to for all these years? it just really shows how people are in their own little silos and are really ignoring the truth that's right before their eyes, that Fishbone's been talking about race and racism the entire time. You know, there has not been a moment where they didn't talk about it, which is why, in addition to everything else, why I was always a fan of that band. But it's just funny to think that they're people who are going to the band just because they like the grooves and not paying attention to the music, to the lyrics.
Yeah, I mean, I think Fishbone, I mean, when I think about stuff like Reality, My Surroundings in like 91, mm-hmm. how they were sort of entering the alt-rock market, mm-hmm. but singing about like racism and singing about what it was like, their experience growing up in like being black and, you know, in the system. And it's like, where else were you seeing that in the alt-rock market in 1991?
Well, yeah, I think it's funny. I think that we think of like these bands, and I'm that generation. So in 91, I was 18. And so at the same time, I'm listening to Fishbone, I'm listening to Living Color, I'm listening to 24/7 Spies, I'm listening to, and Follow For Now had an album out around that time. So I'm listening to all these black rock bands, which is funny to say black rock bands since black people invented rock and roll, but I'm listening to all these black rock bands. And they're all sort of having a lot of the same subject matter that hip hop groups are doing, but they're just doing it in a rock and roll context. So like all those bands are talking about the difficulties of being black in America, the system being against them. You know, it's no different than what Public Enemy's doing. It's just got more guitars and more singing. So, yeah. So it's funny to me that, people associate that with hip hop in a way that they don't associate that with these black rock bands, you know?
Mm-hmm. So when Chris was the first showing you this song, so this is a Chris song originally?
It's a Chris song, yeah. I mean, I don't want to get in trouble with Chris, but that's the way I perceive it. So I don't want to break the band up again.
I actually thought like this is like one of my favorite like songs that they've done recently, and it's also one of my favorite songs that just takes such an overt stance, because sometimes I get a little like, I don't know, if it's too on the nose, it feels a little like preachy, but I didn't feel like that. I didn't take that away from this song.
Well, they're having fun. I mean, even the fact that like, you know, I think Fishbone has always been great. Like, you know, this is right there in the tradition of lying ass bitch. Like, it's like, this is like the A and B side of that single separated by 30 years, you know? So This is just like, I feel like this is right in their wheelhouse. I don't think other bands can necessarily do this and have it land the same way. Like, it's not, it's, it feels like this is what Fishbone does, you know, like, you know, this is in the tradition of like Subliminal Fascism is another song like that. But it's just like, it is what it is. It's where, you know? So I think that for me, it's like this is their lane, you know, not that, you know, a band like Fishbone hates being put in a lane, but their lane is something that only they can do the way they do it.
So, I mean, you refer to it as like a, you know, that it speaks to our times. Like, can you tell me a little bit about your thought process on that? I mean, obviously, you know, things have gotten worse because Trump did get elected after this. But I mean, what was your take on this? I mean,
the interesting thing is a lot of the references in the song, and I think Chris even said this, he wrote it initially during the first era of Trump. Mm-hmm. And when you listen to it, it's like a lot of those references, you go, oh yeah, the tiki torches, that's a era one of Trump. And at the time, when that stuff happened, after, you know, after January 6th, you know, we were like, you know, oh, well, I guess we're never going to see Trump again, because that was totally embarrassing and awful and a stain on American history that he led a revolt against his own country. Whew, well, that era's over and we learned our lesson. And then to see him, like, you know, just a few years later, suddenly a lot of the Republicans who were like demonizing him were like kissing the ring again. And yeah, the fact that he was back meant, like, it's sad that this is the perfect song for our times, because it means we did not learn our lesson well enough. And now we're all suffering because we didn't learn. And I say we, I mean the collective we. I learned my lesson. I don't know about you guys. But but yeah, the collective we didn't learn our lesson. And now you thought it couldn't get worse after Trump the first time. But, you know, weirdly, if we got hit by COVID now, it might make things better. Like, it just might, because at least it would just slow things down again.
I remember talking to Chris. It must have been during Trump 1.0. And I think I remember him going, like, I'm surprised at the racist reaction from like the general people. Like he felt like a little shocked at how many people were willing to go on board with this.
You know, Chris is sort of like me. He's a guy who is around lots of different people and talks to lots of different people, but you're still only in your own, you know. I think maybe the difference is that, like, he's playing shows all over the world, literally. I'm sort of, and all over the country, I'm actually interacting with those people because I've done all these documentaries with the United States of America. And so I was not surprised. I knew it was there. I didn't know how successfully. I think the thing that is most surprising about Trump this time is to see people who were clearly anti-Trump the first time just basically decide to get with the winning team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so I think it's not even so much, and what I'm talking about like the Zuckerberg and Bezos and Elon Musk is not, I don't ever consider him to be like, I never bought he was the new Tony Stark or whatever the nonsense was. But I'm surprised that, like, to see people who clearly know better, I guess I would say, we know that, like, Zuckerberg and Bezos and the head of Google know better, and the head of Apple, Tim Scott, know better, or Tim Apple is what Trump called him. I call him Tim Scott. That's the senator. But anyway, we know they know better, but they're just like sort of want to bet on the horse that is currently winning the race. It's like when people in the Midwest started wearing Yankees caps just because they were the winning team in the 90s. Like, it's just like, what are you doing? So yeah, it just, that's the thing I think is sort of most shocking, but also, you know, yeah, they just care about their money.
Yeah. When you think back to when you were doing like United Shades and you like, you know, you did the episode with the KKK. Like, does this feel like a different era that we're in? Or does it feel like you can see the line? Does it feel like the conversations we should be having are the same ones you felt like we should be having back then?
Oh, no, we're way past those conversations, because we can't have conversations anymore. There's no time for conversations. Yeah. We got to get out in the world. We got to get out in the field. And whether that's out in your community or out in the streets, we got to get out there. It's the time for sort of like the difficult conversations era. That didn't work. I tried. I did the best I could, America. I tried the difficult conversation.
I know.
I mean, because think about when we recorded that Klan episode, it came out in 2016. But we recorded it in 2014. Oh. It just took that long for it to come out. So at the time when we recorded it, Trump was running for president, but nobody was taking him seriously. And then when the I think he was running, but then by the time the episode came out, people still weren't taking him seriously. But it was like clear that, like, and so the thing about like people were like, why are you talking to the Klan? And then by the time he won and clearly was like the Klan, the most extreme racist elements of this country were excited. Suddenly people who were mad at me for doing that episode were like, now I look like some sort of sage, you know, like we're saying like this is coming. Because I think we thought, my theory about it, and I've said this before, is that for some reason, I think we thought after Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, that the racists died of shame. Mm-hmm. But really, they did not die. They just got shamed out of saying that stuff out loud. They just were like, oh, we can't say that stuff out loud anymore because MLK died. So, and what happened, and people have said this, like a lot of the, we think of like all those black and white pictures as being like 100 years old. It's like Martin Luther King Jr. was 39. If he was still alive, he'd be in his 90s. He could still be, you know, that's not the oldest person in the world. And so that means a lot of those kids you see in those photos yelling at black people walking into schools are still walking around. And now they're like, I can breathe racist again. You know, like I can finally be racist again. So I think to take it back to that song, I think those of us who are like, especially in the arts community and also people who've been committed to this work for years, have to be more explicit than we've ever been before, because clearly the metaphors and similes didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fishbone came back with their EP in 2023, and you were a pretty vocal supporter online. You referred to yourself as being, you referred to your job as the Fishbone Soldier as being your longest running job you've had.
That sounds like something I would have said, yeah.
So yeah, like, because I think it was when All We Have Is Now came out. All we have is now. What was your feelings on that EP and sort of them like kind of coming back with, I think Chris came back at that point and it sounded a little bit more in line with kind of older Fishbone musically a bit.
Yeah. So I would say, I think about my Fishbone, like I didn't really show up until Reality My Surroundings. Basically what happened was I got Living Colors album Time's Up. I was like, are there more bands like this? And then this is back in the day of the record store where you had to go, I guess I got to go through every record in the rock section until I see black people is what happened. So, I think Fishbone was about to come out with Reality My Surroundings. So I bought I bought Truth and Soul because this is again, pre the internet kids, you just had to buy a CD and hope it worked out, you know? And that's why used record stores were the best. So that version of Fishbone, which like you said, is the most sort of like alt rock direction, and also the most where they let every member of the band sort of have their moments. So there's songs that are quite different on that album, and you can have whole albums of songs I can't remember the name of that song. It's where Dirty Waltz. It's the Dirty Sex song. New, baby, floating down. Very Parliament Funkadelic. There's like whole styles of song of like, you could have a whole album of that. And so for me, that album is sort of my Touchstone Fishbone album. And then I went back and I liked the earlier stuff a lot. It's just clear that they were like, at that point, I think they would say the producers were like, you need to sort of like clean it up and have one thing to sell the thing. And so the earlier stuff, I think is great. It's just very clear that that's a young band who is not sort of allowing themselves to sort of be everything they can be, you know? So then when I heard this EP, but I know that there are Fishbone fans who think that's the best era. So I know that there's people who are like, I wish they would go back to just being like a pop punk ska band, you know? And so when I heard this EP, I was like, first of all, I'm glad that the band is back together and sort of you're never going to get the original lineup back together, but I'm glad to see all those guys together. And I was just excited. And I love the songs on that album, but I was just excited that those guys seem healthy and happy and they're back together. And hopefully it won't be 20 years before we get another album. So like, I think that was the thing. It was like when you're like, you go to the family reunion. Oh, everybody's still here. Okay, good, good, good. We should do this again instead of waiting 10 years. So I like that EP a lot. And I think All We Have Is Now is also like one of those classic sort of like, you know, again, there's the like racist piece of shit song side of Fishbone, but there's also like the, basically like the the Beatle-esque, we can work it outside of Fishbone, you know, so like there's, which I also appreciate, like the, which is why I think it's great that there's such a force is because they have so many different voices in that band. And when it works, you really get a lot of different flavors.
Yeah, they were working on an album with a full length since like 2020, I think. And then eventually became that EP, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, you know, and there's been a lot of upheaval in the band even since then. So,
do you have a favorite song from that record?
You know, I think All We Have Is Now is the song I keep, it's the song I keep returning to. That's the song I keep sort of like, I think, because again, it's like the B-side to like, you're a racist piece of shit. All We Have Is Now. It's sort of like, it's still like, oh, that's true. All We Have Is Now. But as it's funny because I've talked to Chris, and I think I sort of annoy him sometimes. I'm sort of a fan of the whole arc of Fishbone. So there's stuff that Chris is like when he wasn't in the band, he's like, I don't know about that stuff. I'm like, I do know about that stuff, sir, and it's good. So like there's very little of it that I think that I would condescend to over the arc of their career. Even when it gets super weird and it's like there's all Angelo is like, all I got is this theremin. There's nobody else here. So like I'm just like, all right, man, let's hang out with your theremin for a whole album. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite Fishbone song from that sort of era when they kind of went through the lesser popular era, let's just say?
There's there's an EP they put out that was live that you can't even really find anymore, and I have the CD somewhere. And actually when I started hanging out with Chris, I finally got to hang out with the rest of the band. I hung out with Angelo, and I was like, what happened to that EP? And you know, he couldn't answer. He was like, you know, it's all rights and stuff, but it's called Live. It's like Spacey T's in the band at that point, and there's a song called Are You With It? Are You With It? WID, because that's how Angela does things. Pose the question to me, who is free? Those which master money, love, hate, peace, fear, war, and jealousy. That is a funky, super great jam that I was like, hey, and I asked Angela, are you guys gonna play that now that you're back? But it's clearly like, I would imagine that Chris Dowd has probably never even heard it because he was not in the band at that point. But it's like sort of a very like, again, like a Parliament Funkadelic inspired funk called Are You With It? And it was just a live track. I don't know if there's even a studio version of it, but that EP, I can't even find it on YouTube. You know, sometimes you find things uploaded to places. It's just sort of like, I know I have the CD somewhere, but I don't know what I would do with the CD if I found it. But like, I always search Spotify to see if they finally got the rights back, but it's just sort of lost in time. But it was also recorded live, and Fishbone Live, as everybody would say who's a fan of Fishbone, is where it really happened. So
yeah,
it's a little bit sloppy, but that's what makes it great. I think it's like, that's that era. I like it when it's a little bit sloppy. That's why I'm a Fishbone fan.
Random side question. So sometime in the 2000s, I think it was like late 2000s, D'Angelo was at Afropunk. Yeah, Afropunk. Sorry. Yeah. At the Afropunk festival. And he covered Lemon Meringue and Angelo played with him. Have you seen this footage?
I haven't seen that. That's Lemon Meringue is another one of my like. I think it's on my pre-show playlist for my. I'm doing stand up again, and that's on the playlist that you hear that the crowd hears when they walk in. Lemon Meringue is on there.
I highly recommend you check it out because his D'Angelo's interpretation of Lemon Meringue is amazing.
That's great to know that he appreciates, because that's also like I think Chris was out of the band, but that album. Is again, I think it's a classic. I would put that in my classic Fishbone album too. It's After Reality My Surroundings. That album is great. And it's got a lot. It's again, they're really, and at that point, it's like, they're almost like, well, so much for radio play. Let's just be weird.
What else do you put on your pre-show playlist? What else is on there?
So currently my pre-show playlist, Nina Simone is always on there. Right now it's her covering the Beatles Revolution. Is on there. Tracy Chapman talking about a revolution. Got a lot of revolution on there. Living Color, Solace of You. Sweet Honey in the Rock, Ella's song. It's the song that goes, We Who Believe in Freedom Cannot Rest. And this is another one. This is a deep cut from the 90s. Dion Ferris's song, I Know. It's like a Dion Ferris was the singer in Arrested Development on that song Tennessee, you know, the rap song Tennessee. She's the one who's like, "Oh, won't you help me understand?" Okay. Yeah, I'm doing a great impression.
You sound just like her, voice of an angel.
And if you heard the song, it's called "I Know." If you heard it, you'd be like, "I know this song." It was like a radio like hit, like a alt rock hit in the '90s, and she just nothing ever happened afterwards. But that song like still makes it happen. So yeah, I'm trying to think of what else is on there. And then if the playlist goes too long, you get to John Coltrane's My Favorite Things. That's when you know, like, uh-oh, this is taking forever to load this audience in if I start hearing that. Oh, and Robert Randolph. You know Robert Randolph, keyboard player? He's got a song called Going in the Right Direction, which is a very funky, like, blues, sort of like a juke joint style song that's on the playlist, too.
Nice.
Oh, Mary Clayton. I got it from you and Mary Clayton?
Yeah.
So I discovered Mary Clayton through that film, 20 Feet from Stardom. She's one of like the classic backup singers. She sang on the Rolling Stones. She sang Rape Murder.
Yeah.
So she had a solo career that didn't hit, but she covers The Doors, Tell All the People, and it's amazing.
I had read an interview with Speech like a few years ago where he from Arrested Development, he said that he was saying that the song Mr. Wendell was inspired by a fishbone.
He gives me some knowledge, I buy some shoes, and they think blacks spend all their money on big colleges. Still, most of y'all come out confused. Go ahead, Mr. Wendell.
Like he was trying to write a fishbone song. Yeah, that I just blew my mind a little bit. Because I know they got to know each other from doing Lollapalooza and stuff.
I really think that, like, because I've thought about this a lot and probably too much, that sort of the problem of the music industry, which is a little bit lessened because of the internet. So you can just sort of Google stuff and look things up, but the algorithm is still going to try to force you in a direction. Is that because genre was so limited about what is this and what is that, that kind of fishbone and Arrested Development should be in the same section of the record store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, cause they're sort of like black alternative black people, basically. So even though the music may not, I think we think of genre too, does it sound the same? But it's like, is it coming from the same place? It's just Arrested Development is coming from a Southern version of it, and Fishbone is coming from an LA version of it, from like LA hip hop and also LA punk band. So it's like, I really feel like if we really wanted genre to be more supportive of like exploring your musical tastes, like there would have been a section of the record store where you would have had all these bands together who are sort of like almost like bohemian blacks, you know what I mean? Like just mm-hmm. instead of, because otherwise Fishbone sort of gets screwed because they don't always get filed in the rock and roll section because sometimes it's just because they're black, but sometimes it's like, well, they kind of do a lot of stuff, but then if they're in the ska section, is that really all that? I mean, that one album should be in the ska section, but not the whole thing. So it's like they sort of get, there's no way for somebody like me at 17 to go, I want to find more bands who are like this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what they sound like, but bands who are inspired by these similar ideas. And that's where I would have been. But because of that, a lot of bands fall through the cracks.
Let's say we do not define Fishbone by genre because they're not really, they don't really adhere to a genre.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even a couple genres. Like, how would you define the place that Fishbone's coming from? You know, the thing that you would want to find from other bands. Like,
it's funny. Again, I think the whole problem of genre is it's trying to limit you. And then when you have a band that absolutely doesn't want to be limited, they get screwed. And so it's like you'd have to invent some new way of I think I would call Fishbone Black American Experience Music. Like, I think I would call it, because I think that when you listen to it, it's like, yeah, that's what it is. Because all those genres are black genres. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's not like they're, you know, I'm not saying they couldn't bust out a good polka, but they haven't, and I'm sure they've experimented with it. And even if they did that, they'd do a black version of it. It'd still be the Black American Experience of the polka. But I think there's just a way in which, like, I remember Saul Williams had an album. He's had a couple albums, but his first album was called Amethyst Rockstar. And he said, because he'd come out of spoken word, they kept putting it in the spoken word section, even though it's like, no, this is really a rock album, but they couldn't sort of imagine that spoken word guy was doing a rock album. And again, when I listen to that album, that's Black American Experience Music. That is a black person using music to talk about their experience of being an American. And so for me, if I had a record store, that would be the section I would have. In the same way that, like, I don't know, it makes sense to me that so many white rock stars can go country because they were kind of always country. You know what I mean? Like, it was never like, you know, it doesn't take that much to go from like, where like Hootie, this is a great example, Hootie and the Blowfish, Darius Rucker. It doesn't take a big shift to go from Hootie and the Blowfish to country music, you know?
Yeah.
They're already sort of in, they just sort of put some more fiddles on it. And that's not even a slam or anything. It's just the fact is like, but Hootie and the Blowfish is a rock band and Darius Rucker is a country act, you know? And so it's like, and so I think that a lot of times we just have genre, you know, the way we define genre doesn't even explain the music accurately. My best example of that is Prince. Like, it's Purple Rain is 100% a rock opera, but Prince was smart enough to be like, don't call it rock and roll because then black people won't buy it. So Let's Go Crazy, which is a rock song, gets to play on black radio because he calls it pop and R&B.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and every guitar player worth their salt will tell you that Prince was one of the greatest rock and roll guitar players around. And yet Prince never sort of allowed himself to be filed into that genre because he was trying to make money.
Yeah, Prince, I feel like Prince, I think he gets a lot of props as a songwriter, but he's as a musician and a performer, especially in those later years when he would just do these like crazy, like 3-hour concerts. I think he really showed that he had as a performer, he was actually one of the best there was.
No, for sure. And there's that, you know, the classic, the thing that keeps YouTube operating is that footage of him at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with Tom Petty and have you seen that? It's a tribute to George Harrison, and they play "While My Guitar Weeps, Gently Weeps." Have you seen this footage?
No, I haven't seen that.
Yes. Okay, because you got to go see it. since you haven't seen it, and it's like Tom Petty and George Harrison's son, a bunch of heavyweights and a bunch of heavyweight studio musicians. And Prince plays the solo, and you can tell that, like, even among these heavyweights, they're like, that guy's the famous guy. like that. And at some point, Prince is playing the solo, and he looks at Tom Petty like, do you want me to stop? And Tom Petty's like, no, we don't want you to stop. Like, and he, like, tears this rock, and he tears this guitar solo. That's amazing. And you're like, and it's hilarious to me because it's like, he was just, but he refused to be categorized as rock and roll because he wanted to sell records, which I think makes sense. But it clearly, that was the engine inside. You know, when you think about when Prince came up, he's coming out of the era of Jimi Hendrix, Sly and the Family Stone, Carlos Santana, Parliament Funkadelic. Parliament Funkadelic, by all rights, is a rock band, but because they're black, we've labeled them funk, you know?
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
So when you met Chris in 2023, was that the first time you like met him and got to know the band Fishbone?
100%. Yeah. I was never a guy who was like hanging out backstage, trying to like at the backstage door, trying to meet people. I mean, I did it once when I was 17 to meet Vernon from Living Color. But after that, I was like, I can't be that guy. So, I'd seen them in concert. I mean, I don't know. I've seen that band in concert more than any other band just because they've sort of sustained, whereas other bands break up and take a break. But like, there's always a Fishbone. Angelo won't let Fishbone stop. He's the one constant member. And so like, I've seen them in many different versions, but I was never like trying to like pretend to be their friend. So, I started tweeting I started Instagramming about Fishbone so much that like somebody, whoever runs the Fishbone social media channel, reached out to me and was like, hey, if you ever want tickets or anything. I was like, great. And then I went to the show in San Francisco and they let me know, hey, Chris wants to say hello to you. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And I had no idea he's like what a huge fan of my work he was. And so we just instantly became friends, which was sort of surreal for me. But like, you know, so we got to hang out a lot while he was up here in Oakland. It was great. And I got to sort of like, one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me in my life was they were rehearsing in the studio, in this rehearsal studio. And Chris was like, hey, you want to come by and hang out? And I got to sit there while the new version of the band sort of like went through some classic Fishbone songs and just sort of like, and it was like to sit in the room with them and to sort of feel like whatever this band is, no matter who's in it, there is a fishbone thing that when people come together and they get the right people, that feels like there's no other band like this in the world. And they're all still in good spirits and good shape. And Angelo's still singing great and Chris is singing great. And to sit in this room with like three other people who weren't musicians, it was like, you know, there's those moments you're like, oh, maybe I'm a good person.
So you'd mentioned before that it kind of started with Living Color. So a friend of yours showed you Time's Up. And so this moment of hearing Time's Up for the first time was kind of like a big moment for you, right?
Personal moon landing. Like, oh, is this what music can do? Like, I was a fan of music a little bit, but I was like, I was really more into comedy, stand-up comedy and Bruce Lee and comic books. Like, that was what I was doing. And music was sort of there, but it wasn't like, and so my friend Rob was the guy who like took me to concerts when I was like, oh, well, he was just like, come with me to these concerts. So I think my first concert was Tom Petty. And I was like, this guy's pretty good. And then Rob specifically was like, you need to hear this band. And he's a white Jewish dude from Southside Chicago, understood what his black friend from the Southside Chicago needed. And we sat in his car and played it. And I was like, very quickly, like, yeah, okay, this is my new favorite band. I know the feeling of having a favorite band that I didn't know before. And so, yeah, now this is, I'm a member of this band's army too. Whatever they need, I'm down. And you know, this is the era of like, the only time you can hear about things is you hope they're mentioned in Rolling Stone magazine. You know what I mean? Like, there's no internet. There's no way to know what's going on. And then I literally went to the record store and just started searching for other bands, like just going through it. And you go, oh, 24/7 Spies. This looks like a rock and roll album. This is a bunch of black guys. Let me get this. Oh, Fishbone. Oh, they have a new album coming out. That sounds good. I'll get this one. What is this called? Truth and Soul. Let's check this out. You know, so, and that's how I ended up discovering a bunch of different bands, that through that era. But yeah, it all started with Living Color.
Yeah. The first band I ever saw live was Living Color.
Oh,
that was that tour. I think it was like 90 or 91.
With the Rolling Stones?
No. It was, they headlined, it was at San Jose Civic Center.
Oh, okay.
King's X were the opening act.
King's X is another one. That's another band that I like discovered in that time that like sort of had, and you think about all these bands, they all sort of got like Living Color is the only band that had a hit song.
Yeah.
But like they all had like a little bit of a push. And then I felt like the thing that stopped them was just people being like, just people's perception of what these people should be doing. Mm-hmm. You know, because like King's X is like, I don't know. How are they not one of the biggest bands in the world with like their with the melodies and the way he sings? Like, I don't know how they open for U2, and I'm like, how are they not as big as U2? You know what I mean? And it's just like, it's just because people can't adjust their brains to like, wait a minute, but it's a black guy who sounds like a gospel choir singing over Beatles harmonies. Like, I don't know what to do with that, you know.
And they had that added. They had that added element too, where they were sort of a Christian band, but also
sort of like got lumped in with Christian bands. Yeah, which is never, that doesn't help you. I think they were like, no, we're Christians who play music. We're not like singing to Jesus like a Christian rock band. But yeah.
So Reality My Surroundings was your introduction to Fishbone. Although you got like Truth and Soul and you went back, did you have like any favorite early Fishbone tracks? Ones that really spoke to you?
Oh, for sure. Like, yeah, for sure. I think the album, oh man, now I'm going to be the guy who can't remember. First of all, yeah, the first EP is great. It just, like I said, it just sounds like these guys are like, they're having a good time and they're sort of shaving off all the rougher elements, but like, I'll still play, but Party at Ground Zero is still like a banger. Like, it's not like a, you know, it's not like a song that doesn't, it stands the test of time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, it's, I think that like, I still am like every now and again bumping like Lion Ass Bitch and things like that. Like that's still a classic. I'm happy that exists in the world. And then there's a second album, which is like the proper album, which I used to like there, you know, it's funny to hear like how young they were and how sort of like again, in a little bit, there's a little part of Fishbone that's a little bit like Two Live Crew with instruments.
Yeah.
So like there's like songs like Charlie when I was a teenager, I was like, yeah. Like I'm not bumping them now with my $3 in the house, but like there certainly that second album had a lot of great songs on it. But really, and so that, and then, you know, I I think Truth and Soul is where they started to find themselves. Like Truth and Soul is, again, you listen to that, like, how is this not one of the biggest albums in the world? Like, you just sort of listen to Truth and Soul. Like, so that cover of Freddy's Dead for forever was the only way I knew that Freddy's Dead existed. And then I found out, oh, this is actually, they're actually covering a song. And then, like, there's that song, the Howard Beach song that's on that album. And the song Change is on that album. It's another one that, that's a song they played live in the rehearsal studio that I was like, that I hadn't heard. I don't know if I'd ever heard it live before, and they played it in the rehearsal studio. And I just was like, again, a song that stands the test of time. But so definitely, and that album also has Bonin' in the Boneyard, which is an instant classic. And just like also just really, and they've all sort of separated now, but like you cannot underestimate the power of Norwood as a bass player in Fishbone. Like, I don't know, Les Claypool, yes, 100%. Also Norwood. Like, that's all I want to say. Is,
yeah.
Like, you know, it's just like that there's also the Bone in the Boneyard has one of those bass lines that is undeniable. And I think he's not in the band right now, and that none of that's my business, and I don't ask questions. But you know, because also to imagine that these guys have been friends since they were kids, how could you all always want to be together? Like, how could you, like I have one friend from when I was in high school. One, if you forced me to be with the other people, it'd probably be a problem. But Norwood really, like, is just an incredible gift, the fact that all those guys were friends and also incredible musicians is also super weird, because usually there's one friend who's not taking it that seriously, but they were all like really showed up. So yeah, I would say that like Truth and Soul is just, that's a classic album.
I mean, they might have had that friend, but that friend might just not have ended up in the band.
Yeah, I guess I don't mean to call anybody out. I feel like Walt was in the band for vibes, which is fine. He had the best vibes. He was like just sort of there to like keep the party moving, and he played a little bit of that tiny trumpet. Yeah.
Yeah. Reality was my intro. And I think this is before I was familiar with ska, but I was really interested in alternative rock and like sort of the, what they were calling funk rock, you know, in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I found it. But then when I heard Truth and Soul, that was like, that just became my favorite record. Even though I really love Reality in My Surroundings. And I think that, I feel like that album's really held up well. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really sound like it's a unique record to Fishbone's catalog, but it also doesn't really sound like anything of that time either.
Yeah, I think it's, I think that's where it comes, that's the problem. Because if you think about music in that era, like rock music in that era, there's a real sense of like, the Seattle sound sounds like this, even though those bands don't, but there's a sense of like a Pearl Jam album sounds like a Pearl Jam album from the moment you open it to the moment you close it. And I love these bands. Soundgarden, who is my favorite Seattle band, is always Soundgardening. And I think the issue with Fishbone and say with Nirvana, they're always Nirvana. There's like, and not to say they don't have dynamics, and don't say they don't do different things, but Fishbone, that album, Reality My Surrounding, is really challenging you.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, cause the first three songs of that album don't even sound like they're on the same album. Like, you know, like, you, like even, and even the little like detours with the, like with the, If I Were A, like these little like vignettes, it's like, what is happening? Like? And I think if you're the kind of person who's like, I just want it to sound like the thing that I thought it was going to sound like, that album's not your friend. Like, that album's not your, but whereas for me, I was like, I like when things get cacophonous and weird and strange, and probably because one of my friends was a big Frank Zappa fan. And so I was used to like things like, why, what are they doing now? And so Fishbone has that same version, like sort of, what are they doing now? So that you can go from like the same album that has Fight the Youth, also has Everyday Sunshine, also has Those Days Are Gone. Oh, Nasty Man. That's the song. Nasty Man is the song where it's like a Two Live Crew song with instruments, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting that, Everyday Sunshine seemed to be their big mainstream push.
Yeah.
But it's basically like a gospel punk song in 1991. Yep. It's such a, I mean, it's a great song, but God, such a weird choice, like from a PR label, you know, band perspective, it's such an odd choice.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, it's also, it's a great song, but also it's almost a problem because no other song on the album sounds like that.
Sure, yeah.
So it's like, so you buy the album, you're like, wait a minute, there's not even one other song in here that's halfway like that. They also, I know Spike Lee directed the video for Sunless Saturday, which is one of, which at that point, getting Spike Lee to touch your thing, if you're a black creative, is like, yay, buddy, you know, so it's like, it's, but, and that's, and I think that's a classic rock song. I would just put that up against anybody else's anything. And yet it just, you know, I've talked about this a lot, and I'm actually working on a project about this. Like, rock and roll is the most successfully stolen genre of black music, and that black people don't even remember that we invented it. Mm-hmm. And white people don't remember that we invented it. And so seeing black people play rock and roll, especially at that point, a lot of people were like, why are these black guys playing white boy music? Mm-hmm. Even though 20 years earlier, the biggest rock star in the country is Jimi Hendrix. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there was on the record after, the one you were talking about, Give a Monkey a Brain and He'll Swear He's the Center of the Universe.
Yeah.
They took that clip of the Damon Wayans special, which I remember seeing it when it happened, where he was making fun of Fishbone for playing white boy music. And I was like, that is insane. I don't even understand this point of view. And the crowd is cracking up.
I went to see Fishbone. Yeah, just like two people, black people don't know Fishbone. They go, is that soul food restaurant? These some brothers that play that heavy metal, that meow, that stuff you see on MTV and Turn From. I went to see these brothers, they were Naughty Dread down, and brother picked up the guitar and went, I was kicking shit. White people, nothing but white people in here. They was just like, radical dude, radical. Brother got into his shit, ran and jumped off the stage into the audience. And they caught him and passed him around like a joint.
The funny thing for me, I was like, it was like my worlds collided because I was a huge stand-up comedy fan. So when I saw Damon Wayans do that joke, I was just excited that he said the word fishbone out loud in front of black people. I was like, yay! that felt like a real victory that he's acknowledging their existence.
Yeah.
That he's like, even if he's making fun of them, but he's at least acknowledging their existence. And I thought maybe that will help black people go home. But back then there's no Google. They probably thought he made up the words fishbone. And you know, and so like so the fact that he was acknowledging them, I was excited about, and then to get the album and they use that in their thing. My brain was just like, oh, like these are two different things that I didn't know would come together. And so, yeah. And yet at the core, it's about the fact that he's saying these black guys are weird. Exactly. These black guys are weird because they play the music that we invented. And so that's a great example of somehow rock and roll got so hijacked from us that like all these bands can tell you story after story of them getting grief from black people about playing the kind of music they play. And they're like, we grew up listening to like they're all like the post Jimi Hendrix generation, you know, like we were listening to, and the Sly Stone generation. And like, it's not like there was like some big point where black people stopped playing rock and roll. It's like, we were just continuing the thing, but somehow the chain of command got broken. So nobody, somehow people forgot that they were continuing a black tradition. And even then, of course, then white people like also have forgotten.
Yeah.
Well, and to a lesser degree, you get the same thing now with ska.
Yeah.
People trying to say that ska is corny white boy music. And it's like, yeah, this shit came from Jamaica. Like,
yeah, exactly. It doesn't get blacker than Jamaica. Just be clear.
And not only that, like, I mean, like the foundation of American ska's Fishbone. I mean, that's the blueprint that was used for American ska was that first EP. I think it's pretty like, you know.
And, you know, and what you get is credit. But as we all know, credit won't pay your bills unless it's a credit line. Like, it's not good, you know. So, and that's why I think is the most tragic is like, I feel like right now, the role I play a lot of times when I'm putting these posts up on Instagram is like, I always say, remember when white guys went to the Mississippi Delta in the 60s and discovered blues musicians? I'm the white guy discovering black rock bands from the 90s. Look at these bands I discovered that we haven't focused on enough. So yeah.
Was there a specific song of Fishbone's from whether it be Reality or Tooth and Soul that really just like when you heard it, you're like, okay, I'm all in. This I love this. Like this one song really kind of hits me.
Man, I'm looking at the track listing now because I realize I'm like, let's see, Truth and Soul. I mean, these are I think I'm going to say, it's funny. I'm going to say, on Reality Bites, I'm going to give you three songs, if that's okay.
Sure, please.
So I had never heard a song like Pressure before in my life. And it felt like I know exactly what this song is talking about. And I still know exactly what that song is talking about. And I remember whenever they would play it live, I would just have my, you know, this is the era of the mosh pit. That would be my moment to be like, well, time to go in the pit. I've been called. Pressure is a song. I just have never, it's a tribute to this album. Like, there's no other song on the album that's even like that. Just the energy of that song, the pace of that song, the push of that song. The fact that I feel it in my bones and my DNA, that I know what it's like to feel pressure. And I think a lot of that is how, as a black person in America, what it's like to feel pressure and that's why I loved about it. There's also a tremendous release when you're in that song, just to be like, ah, there's just a tremendous, especially when you're 18, 19 years old, it's like you need that release in more ways than one. So for me, like that, I would say I'm going to put, that's a song that for me, I like a lot. I like all the songs on the album. But that's the song to me is the most, maybe the most fishbone of all the fishbone songs on the album, in that it's never, ever, ever going to get played on the radio. It's never, ever, ever. I don't even know what, you know, it's definitely like, you know, because that fishbone has a thing where it's definitely like a little bit punk. It's a little bit like thrash metal. It's a little bit, but also you can feel the bass of like the funk bass. And it's like, it's an assembly. It's just fishbone.
Yeah.
And then the other one would be Everyday Sunshine. I think it's just a classic. How I wish Everyday Sunshine. I don't know how you top that as a rock and roll songwriter. So that would be, did I say I was gonna give three? I'll just give two.
Okay. I think Everyday Sunshine has such an interesting point of view and interesting lyrics too, which I don't think really get discussed much. Just this sort of like, I don't know, like the optimism in the face of like everything feeling like you shouldn't feel optimistic. Just
yes, it's melancholy. I mean, there's no, you know, it's like, again, when you think about the Ice Cube song, Today Was a Good Day, it's basically the same song. These are the same song. And both these guys are from, you know, South Central LA, and so it's like, are both these groups, you know, and it's the same song I wish every day the sun would shine is telling you that the sun does not shine every day.
Yeah,
you know, so and today was a good day is telling you every day is not a good day. So for me, it's, and then when you hear what composes a good day, you're like, that's a good day, yikes. But like, I think again, and Everyday Sunshine is really the, when I said three songs, I was like, we'd already talked about it. Everyday Sunshine is also like, man, the world would be a better place if that had been a hit song. That's all I just think. That, like, something would have shifted dramatically if that had been a hit song. Because I just think it was, it's a, and especially when you see it in concert and they play it for like 25 minutes, it's just like, you know, it just really, it really sort of powers and sort of inspires a whole audience of people.
Now, what's interesting to me, because we interviewed Norwood, God, it must have been a year ago now. And, you know, what you talked about before about like sort of like, them playing rock and roll music was like a lot of people had issues with it, but he was talking a lot about like the amount of people in the hip hop scene, like rappers that acknowledged them and that were fans of them, was more than I even understood. Like not just Ice-T, not just people that you're aware of, but he just told us all these different people that were like super into them, like rappers from their era. And I thought it was super fascinating that they had so many fans of the rap scene themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they get it. They get what they're doing.
Well, I think we always, I mean, I think Chuck D did the best example of that. We sort of, I think again, genre makes us think that even musicians we like only like the genre that they're shelved in. When if you're going to be a good musician, you're definitely taking in more than just one genre of music. Cause that's how it works, you know? So, like, I just think it's possible. It's like, so for me, it's like Chuck D made it clear from the very beginning that he was a fan of Anthrax. You know what I mean? Like, he's sort of like, you know, like there's, he made sure to check it. I mean, I remember people have always talked about how Run DMC said early on, we're the kings of rock. I think a lot of great musicians, you're taking in a lot of different music and you may express it in one genre, and I'm doing scare quotes, but that doesn't mean you're only listening to one genre. And all I would really say when I hear the story of what you're telling about these rappers is like, then let your fans know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where I come. That's why you see me talking about it, because I'm like, I'm not saying, I just know that I have a lot of fans. I have, because of the way social media works, I have more social media followers than Fishbone does. So if they're going to release a new thing, almost whether I like it or not, probably whether I like it or not, which I always like it, but I'm just saying, I just want to help sort of spread the word of Fishbone. And, you know, like, and I do that with all the bands, especially the bands that I feel like need it. And I feel like we're so selfish in our, like, want to sort of shine light on things, or like, what do I get out of this? And it's like, if every rapper who liked Fishbone let people know that they had a new album come out and even said, this might be different than what you normally listen to, but you're going to appreciate it, it would actually make a difference. And so it's funny to hear, when you hear that, you hear yay. When I hear that, I'm like, come on, guys. Like, then say something.
Yeah. So thinking about, you know, Fishbone, you know, in 2025, I mean, like, what is your thoughts about them and their importance, you know, their continued importance into this day?
Again, it's like, I think, you know, these guys are all in their, like, 50s, and I don't know how old they are, but, like, they're definitely, I'm in my 50s, so they're in their 50s, definitely. This is our last, like, I really do, the talking about Muddy Waters in his later years, or B.B. King, or like, you know, get with the program, because, like, these guys are still out here, they're still playing, they're still great, so I really feel like this is the time to really, like, go appreciate these guys while they're still here and kicking ass, is how I feel like that. Because certainly, if you sit down the Red Hot Chili Peppers and go, who are the bands who you thought when you started, who are the bands that were on the scene who you thought were good too, they're going to say Fishbone. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're able to get an honest answer from Gwen Stefani, she sort of seems to have something has happened. I don't know exactly what's happened, but something's happened.
Something's weird happening.
Lots going on over there. But if you were to say, what are the bands that inspired you, and No Doubt back in the day, she's going to say Fishbone. So it's like, Fishbone is one of those classic examples of, like, they're your favorite band.
Yeah.
Like, and as Chris would say, back in the day, nobody wanted to follow Fishbone on the lineup. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really about, like, you're doing yourself a disservice by not checking in with Fishbone. And the great thing about their catalog is, if you just like the ska stuff, there's plenty of it. Those first couple albums, and also the new EP. If you like the more sort of like eclectic stuff, there's plenty of it. If you like the stuff where it's like, man, it sounds like Angelo's in a garage with his friend, there's that too. It's like, there's just a lot of different versions of Fishbone out there. So there's something for everybody. And sometimes that's on one album, like Reality of My Surroundings or Give a Monkey a Brain. Because also, we didn't even cover the album that suddenly, like, was produced by, like, an R&B producer, Dallas Austin, and Busta Rhymes is on it.
Oh, yeah. Was that Chim Chim's Badass Revenge?
Chim Chim's Badass Revenge. I think that's a great album. I like that album. Chris just swears off at albums.
I think it's a good album. Yeah.
That's a good album. Sorry, man. Sorry. Yes, it would have been better for you there, but you weren't there. I feel like he's like your dad. Dad, you left. I had to live with what I had at that point. Yeah. But yeah, so I think they're like, and then there's the album where it's like, they did like a Fishbone and Friends, where it's like, I think Gwen is on it. That's where the Fishbone family, I think it's called. Let me just pull it
up. It's got like a really long name, yeah, with like those weird
Fishbone and the Familyhood Nets. Yeah, this is when they got too much into nutmeg. Fishbone and the Familyhood Net Experience present the Psychotic Friends Nutworks. That's a great album, and it feels like that was their attempt to, like, we're gonna find all of our famous friends and put them on an album and see if it, like, and it also has sort of a consistent sound, but like, Karma Tsunami is a song I always return to. The Shaky Ground is a song I always return to. So it's like, everybody's a stars on the album, and they Fishbone the hell out of that song. So I think that, like, there's just so many different eras of Fishbone, and all of them have something to provide.
The
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying ska now more than ever. Second to last outro you're going to have, folks. But you know what? If you want more, sign up for the Patreon. That's right. For $5 a month, you get access to our exclusive back catalog of episodes with no ads and bonus content, and you'll get to keep track of what Aaron does next.
Mm-hmm. And it'll stay up. And if you want to go back and listen to the years of bonus content and extended episodes that we've recorded at any point in your life, 30 years from now, if you're hearing this episode and you want to sign up to Patreon, do it.
And maybe Aaron will even let you know what I'm up to.
Yeah. Although you should follow him on Omnigon. Social media accounts.
Yeah, follow all the social media accounts, but mostly just Instagram.
By the way, I love your Taco Bell Omnigon shirt.
Oh, thanks.
I'm sure you've sold 1,000 of those so far, right?
Not quite 1,000, but it's selling pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want a Taco Bell Omnigon shirt?
I mean, you haven't ordered one, but...
Yeah, well, it's because...
Come on, it's summertime. Get a tank top on that body. Sun's out, guns out. Show off that hairy chest.
All right. I like that it's Baja Blast colors, too, so.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Get started on your painting project this summer and save big money at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust 5-in-1 Spray Paint lets you choose from 5 unique spray patterns with a twist of the dial, so you can get a professional, corrosion-resistant finish on every project. Save big money on Rust-Oleum Spray Paint now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money.